Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rance Macabre, covering all things horror.
With every episode, we explore the genre with sharp focus and deep production.
We want you to love scary movies as much as we do, so we don't overshare plots or give spoilers.
Welcome back, listeners. Welcome.
Hello.
It is the month of March, which is going to be springtime soon. Hello. It's very exciting for us here in New York because it's freezing fucking cold here.
I was going to say, yeah. Exciting if, well, I don't know. The weather's been erratic. There have been some days that, like, I went out in a jean jacket, Mindy. A jean jacket.
It's true. And then other days where me, myself, and if you knew me, this is not a thing I do, I went out in, like, my workout pants and sweatpants over the top of them. It was so cold. Sweatpants, Darren. That's where I'm at with this winter.
You're at level sweatpants.
Yeah, that is level sweatpants. And not even just admitting like defeat. My good sweatpants, which, yes, there's a difference between my good sweatpants and my not good sweatpants, even in my bad sweatpants, man. So that's been happening. You, though, however, have been very social. I've been wearing sweatpants and you've been out and about.
I have gotten out of the house during the winter. I had my meetup and there was an event for women in horror. I find it's useful to like force myself to be social and leave the house every once in a while. And in this case, it was the first meetup I've thrown as an organizer for the New York Horror Movie Meetup Group. And it went really well. I was so pleased.
Good. Excellent.
I was really nervous. I didn't watch Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, the original Ken Darby made-for-TV movie. I didn't watch it before the meetup.
Oh, fun. Good. That's always a surprise.
Yeah.
And what did you think of that?
Well, I thought the movie was extraordinarily tense, or maybe it just could have been me, because I was worried I was going to let everyone down.
That's your fear, is letting people down?
Yeah. But yeah, it turned out it's fun to watch in a group because it is kind of insane and a little bit silly, you know, the sort of monsters. I actually love them. I didn't find them frightening, but I love the creatures in that, you know, despite themselves.
I love little tiny monster people creatures. Here's something, though, that I've been realizing. You know, previously I was like, what? I would just squish them. They can't be that strong. They're very tiny. Now having a baby, that baby is really freaking strong. I try to cut his fingernails and he fights me all the way. And I think that's how, because I always thought like Chucky, like how strong can he be? Very strong.
Yeah, no, people forget. I mean, even like baby chimps in movies. Yes, I'm going there. Baby chimps in movies are stronger than like a full grown human being. And I imagine like right up to a reasonable, like, maybe teenage age, kids are proportionally strong, unlike chimps.
Like you might be calling my baby a chimp. Maybe. I mean, it sounds that way.
Well, you're the one who said his grip was very strong.
I actually didn't. I just said he was very strong. You're inferring.
Oh, how does he demonstrate his strength then?
By flailing and trying to pop me in the mouth every now and then. That's always fun. He also has like excellent like headbutting strength. Having a weak neck, my baby has. Wow, he can flail that head around and use it like a mace, really. So I'm looking forward to the future broken noses and black eyes.
Wow. You know what? I'm thinking back to it. My nephew, I guess he was probably toddler age. We were at the supermarket. I'm kind of handed him while his mother goes, you know, deeper into the supermarket to find something. And I think I watched his thought process happen in his eyes because he saw his mother walk away. And then he gets the, like, look of, you know, I'm going to freak out and cry. And then he looks at me like I'm the source of this separation. And then he looks back. He balls up a fist. He goes from an open hand. He looks at it. He closes it. And now he's got his weapon. And he looks back at me. And he pops me right in the mouth in the middle of the supermarket. I got cold clocked by a toddler in public. And there wasn't fuck all I could do.
Oh, no. You can't say shit.
No. My impulse. I wanted to like just drop him. Like I thought that would be reasonable. That you know, he wants out. Now you're out. Go find your mom. Like, but I got
like at least he thought enough of you to not open hand slap you in public and rather punch you, which I feel was probably like actually considerate because a slapping would be far more I think embarrassing.
I don't know if like I feel like slapping. There's a degree of like almost pity, like aggressive pity where you're choosing to slap rather than punch.
Exactly. So like, at least he thought enough about you, right?
I don't know if that's what he was thinking, but yes, no, the children, feats of strength that it'll be. Yeah, that's he's like Bonk, the video like or Bam Bam from the Flintstones. Who's no, it was Bonk who used his head to smash walls. Right?
Yeah, it's
from TurboGrafx-16.
I'm afraid because his head is also still rather soft. So he really should stop doing that.
That's a gamble. Yeah, that's
Kim Darby has inherited this house from her grandmother. But the house has some secrets.
What's this?
It's for cleaning out the ashes.
It's been bolted shut.
By me. And that's the way it should stay.
I think we have visitors.
Visitors?
Mice. I thought I saw something in the kitchen. But it was something like this. A little ferocious animal grabbed at my dress.
I want you, Sally. I want you. We want you.
Don't be afraid of the dark.
So throwing it back to Tiny Monsters.
Yeah, no, so that was Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which turned out okay to watch in a group. We also watched Attack the Block, which is just a perennial favorite.
Love it.
Yeah, that one I was confident and sure the group would love it, and they did. We also did the DVD exchange, which was inspired by me trying to get rid of some DVDs, but I came home with more DVDs than I left with. It was, I picked up like 12 DVDs that I now have to make some decisions about.
You didn't give away your Ice Cream Man DVD, did
you? That
one got ruined, my Ice Cream Man DVD, just so everyone knows. I'm going to just have to buy it again, but I actually don't have anything that plays a DVD, so...
Nope,
I'm done with that, apparently.
Oh, weird. Okay.
I have not one item. I can play Blu-rays.
Oh, well, actually, on the laptop you're on now, you could play a DVD.
No, I cannot.
No?
I don't have a hole. Oh, wait, let me not say that phrasing. On the... I don't have I can't find a word that's not sexy. I don't have a DVD drive.
On the right side, there's not a DVD slot.
Darren, I think I would know if there was a fucking DVD drive on my computer. Wouldn't I know that?
I thought yours is like the same exact laptop that I have.
No, that's the old one. I have this new one that I got when I did grad school.
Oh.
There's nothing.
I guess you'll have to stream it like everybody else.
That's true.
Okay, so DVDs. Well, less so DVDs, but tapes. Mindy, let's talk about tapes, specifically
the Ted Bundy tapes.
Or Conversations with a Killer.
He didn't look like anybody's notion of somebody who would tear apart young girls.
My name is Ted Bundy.
I've never spoken to anybody about this. I am looking for an opportunity to tell the story as best I can.
Okay, here's the deal. Firstly, on Netflix, I think it's totally worth watching. However, I take a little bit of like, I don't think so. When everyone keeps talking about how good looking Ted Bundy was, right?
You're going straight to that.
I'm going.
Let's knock this guy down a peg.
I'm starting there because honestly, he looks a little bit like Andy Kaufman sometimes.
Old lawyer, what is unusual to see is that many of the onlookers are women.
Are you a little scared when you look at him?
He just doesn't look like the type to kill somebody.
Serial killer Theodore Bundy has escaped once again.
One of the FBI's most wanted men.
He was charming, good looking, smart. Are you sure you have the right guy?
I mean, I'm not an animal, I'm not crazy, I'm on a split personality. I mean, I'm just a normal individual.
Yeah, I listened to the last podcast on the left talk about this, and those guys are, you know, true crime fanatics, so they're the first ones to call out, like, the sensationalism versus, like, the, you know, reality of the crimes and that kind of thing. But the series itself, I liked a lot. It's so polished. Mm-hmm. It's so professional. It's done by the same guys who did the Paradise Lost
series.
Joe Berlinger and Bruce Sinofsky. So these guys are consummate professionals. And what I'm finding now, it took me a little while to realize what was happening, but when they have, you know, they've got a lot of audio, and even that audio is broken up, and they don't use that much of their interviews mm-hmm. with Bundy. It's just kind of used as a loose framing device, but there are a lot of moments that require reenactments or cutaway scenes, and it's almost like a Instagram filter for the 1960s that they run footage through. I mean, also set design plays a big part in it, but like they're just kind of manufacturing these perfect backgrounds.
Right. And that kind of irritated me a great deal.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I didn't care for that because at first they're not telling you, cause it's showing a lot of archive footage, and they're not telling you that this isn't real. And so at first you think this is like home videos and things like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's not barely anything is actually archive footage and from his life or from real things that happened. And that at first bothered me a great deal. And then I got used to it. And then as the series goes on, it gets less and less of that. He kind of weans you away from that tool. And then it becomes a lot more, focused by the end of it. I thought the first part doesn't match the finale, let's say.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense in terms, it's funny, I hadn't really thought of it because the later part of the series is like the numerous trials of Ted Bundy. And so for that, like at that point, he was the focus of a media circus and
right.
It was just nonstop footage. But you could imagine that in the first part of this story, you know, there's, perhaps some crime scene photos, there's social photos of Ted Bundy, but there's not a ton of material to pull from. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't wild about it. I thought it kind of lent an extra bit of gloss where like, wow, they really do have footage for everything in this movie.
Yeah, that's because I mean, even when Jax and I were watching it, we're like, how do they have video of this? And then we're looking it up because it's never said or never. And I think as a documentary, it should be a little more forthcoming with that, but it never said like, this isn't really footage. And you have to infer that, which you do eventually. But at the beginning you think, holy shit, you know, like Jesus Christ, this guy must have videotaped his whole life, you know, like Tarnation or something, but no, that's not the case. These are just archive footage that has nothing to do with Ted Bundy.
There was something unique about Ted's brain. He talked in terms of a voice in his head, and this voice would start saying things about women.
He had very blue eyes. When he really got going, his eyes went absolutely black.
So the documentary is based on the book from the 80s. So this wasn't like an investigatory documentary series. This is more of like a recap of Ted Bundy. I think it's capitalizing a little bit on the movie coming up that Zac Efron is in. What is it's got a long name.
It's Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, also directed by Joe Berlinger. But I'm also very excited because John Malkovich is going to be in it, and you know how I love him.
Rachel and I just watched his Amazon Prime Poirot story. And he does what is supposed to be a Belgian accent.
Oh, no.
Wow, man. He,
not good.
Didn't really nail it. No.
didn't really get there.
John Malkovich waved off his accent coach.
John Malkovich has been making poor decisions, I feel, lately.
Hold my beer. But yeah, so I didn't realize Joe Berlinger was directing the Zac Efron movie. But
yeah,
all right, so
he
that,
is.
I mean, speaks to authenticity, I suppose.
I suppose. Lots of people are in this. You know, John Malkovich, Jim Parsons is in it, Haley Joel Osment, but also James Hetfield.
Huh.
So take that as you do.
Doesn't James Hetfield look like a slightly younger gym rat version of Tom Waits? And Tom Waits is a great character actor.
Well,
it's all
yeah,
in the face,
I guess.
Right?
I think it's more that, you know, Joel Berlinger is a huge Metallica fan. So he was probably like, you want to play a cop? Here you go.
Oh, that's fun.
A person of this type chooses his victim for a reason. Possession, control, violence.
So the documentary does contain some of the audio from the tapes. And we do, I feel like they almost try and melodramatically push the like extreme, like they build Ted Bundy up to be the end all be all monster. Like
right.
he is the most evil human being anyone's ever created. And because he's never represented that way in any footage, it's kind of hard to get an actual sense of like just how horrible the crimes he committed were.
Yeah, well, they don't really go into the nitty-gritty of the crimes. It's because it's a personality piece. It's all about his personality. When it goes into the Florida murders, it gets a little graphic, but it doesn't really focus on that part. And I find that to be really kind of like, that's the part, if you want to vilify somebody, let's talk about their crime. And instead, I felt like it does kind of what the papers did during that time, which was really play into this personality, this cult of personality feeling about Ted Bundy.
Yeah, and I wasn't that wild. And it's funny that like when we opened, you joked about how, you know, he's like a Wisconsin 6, like a New York 4.
Yes,
right.
I in our house we say a Boston 8 maybe, and he's probably like Ted Bundy's probably like a Boston 7.
But yeah, so the framing that's kind of followed Ted Bundy, I think a lot of it is his own doing. Like, he certainly loved the spotlight every minute of it, which is ironic because he spent all that spotlight time defending himself and deferring, you know, accusations of atrocities. But I wondered if you thought the same thing. When the documentarians feel that they've hit a brick wall with Bundy not wanting to talk about his crimes, they kind of change gears.
Mm-hmm.
At which point they try and frame their questions to like cater to his narcissistic, sociopathic ego.
Right.
By telling him that, like, Ted, you're the expert. We're stumped. Here are these crimes that you're being committed, but we can't make heads or tails of them. And so maybe in that way, he'll start talking about the Kimberly Leach murder or the Florida State University Chi Omega sorority.
Mm-hmm.
And he does take the bait. And he does start talking about it in third person.
For as smart as Ted Bundy thought he was, that's a very simple way to trick a person.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the first play. I mean, it's not exactly reverse psychology, but sort of flattery. Like, that's fucking old school.
Right, but it'll get you everywhere.
The other thing it reminded me of was the scene from Mindhunter.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it Jerry Brudos? When they realize he's not going to admit to shit. Even years after, at different times, he already has admitted to things. He's denying those admissions. And so they're, again, at the same type of brick wall. But when they flatter him and they ask for his advice, some insight into psychology, then again, like, yeah, you make him the star of the show and let him tell you what, you know, it happened because he's a genius and he can figure it out and whatever, he's faking empathy and he sort of, you know, takes the show from there. And Bundy did just that. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird workaround that I guess at this point it's not as if they needed his admission.
Right.
But as like true crime fans, we always want an admission of guilt. We always want a confession, don't we?
As true crime fans, you want that moment, I think, where that you trick them and go, aha, see, I got you. You know, you really want to see that, or you want, especially now in the days of post-Jinx world and the way that we think, we want to catch it on tape and we want to be like, or that courtroom scene where the lawyer trips them up and they admit to something. I think that's what we want because we live in that kind of society where we want nice, tied up, you know, no loose ends kind of a thing. But there is still a lot of loose ends actually in Ted Bundy's case. And I found a couple of his murders that he gets on his credits. I feel completely not his MO really. And so I feel like sometimes some of them he was just blamed for some of it. And maybe that's partly why he wasn't admitting to some of it.
Okay. Like some of the earlier murders or some of the later ones?
Some of the later ones. And I mean, clearly he could have been doing it. I think one of the weirdest ones, and there's supposedly all this evidence that ties him to it, but that Kimberly Leach murder, young girl, completely not his normal victim. And there's so much evidence, and previously there he wasn't leaving all this evidence everywhere, and that one just has evidence after evidence after evidence. I don't know about that.
I got the feeling around that time, I think most exemplified in the Chi Omega sorority instance, that like he was frenzied
mm-hmm.
a lot of this time. So in terms of like varying his, you know, his standard victim type, yeah, I don't know. I felt like there were moments where like he was losing control. And I don't know, I guess he's kind of talked about, you know, the dark side of him, and, you know, different women have attested to like whatever things he said in terms of, you know, he's got a darkness in him, but that's about as much as he'll admit to, it seems like.
Right. I thought one of the most amazing stories was the woman who gets away.
Yeah.
I had no clue about that. I didn't know that had ever happened. And that was amazing because that's how they originally kind of get him, is for kidnapping.
Right, right. I didn't know the extent to the story. I knew that he was picked up in Florida. I think it was like a check stop, right? They were just like looking into cars and whatnot. But I knew that he was a person of interest when that happened, but I had no idea he fucking escaped from custody twice.
Twice. And
that's
the
bananas.
Second time, like, essentially just walking out, no problems.
Yeah, that's insane. But it also, it speaks to, like, the theme of this guy's life, that, like, he will forever get the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
There is something magical, mystical about white mediocrity that people are like, ah, who's he going to tell? Or who's he going to hurt? What's he going to do?
And it's like, he racked up quite a number as he was out.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, the people responsible for, you know, looking over him, knowing that, like, yeah, he escaped custody and then one time just left custody. And just kept fucking murdering, because that's what a, you know, psychopathic killer does. Like, he's not going to wait till someone stops or stop on his own. Like, he's going to keep doing it until he gets caught.
Caught again.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that was really wild. There was a lot of parts of the story that I didn't know, and I was shown through this because, you know, I knew he was braggadocious, and I knew that he had this huge personality. But I didn't know some of the ins and outs of him escaping, him failing a few times to try and kill some people. You never hear about that. I feel when we hear about these infamous serial killers, you hear only about their successes. You don't hear about their failures as a killer. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, and I think they probably could have divided some of the attention away from Ted Bundy and onto the victims, because it just kind of like they treat it like a cast of characters in waves, where it's like, well, this is when he was living in Colorado in the Pacific Northwest, and the bodies just kind of added up. But, and well, I mean, I guess that's kind of the horror when you've got numbers the way he.
Well, like, I think, though,
they become numbers.
Yeah. And I do think the film is set up to express the personality of Ted Bundy. It's not to showcase the victims. It's not to showcase the cops or the detective work or anything. It's to showcase the personality of this man, which was huge, very like to his own detriment. His ego was just insane. And it is to promote this further film with Zac Efron, which Zac Efron's going to be the star. So they want to build it up, I think, right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's sad to consider, but it makes sense.
Theodore Bundy has escaped, suspected of dozens of sex killings in Washington State, Idaho, Utah, and Colorado.
I think things are going to work out. That's about all I can say.
Okay, so kind of par for the course in terms of this sensationalist take on Ted Bundy. The documentary was released 30 years to the day after the execution of Ted Bundy. And that was another piece of the history that I had no idea that when he was executed, it was like people were tailgating. It was a fucking party. It was pretty morose. I don't get into that.
That was really fucked up, don't you think?
Yeah.
For me, myself, like, I never believed that anyone should kill another person, like, anybody at all, so I don't believe in the death penalty. That's where I stand on that. But I found it, like, really disgusting to watch all the people celebrating. It's the same way when, like, Bin Laden was killed, people were celebrating, and it's like, I get that there are bad, evil, terrible, but I feel like I think it's like icky. It makes me feel really gross to see people celebrating that stuff, and that was wild, and you're just like, you really shouldn't be celebrating this.
Yeah, it was creepy. The instant novelty of it, like selling on last podcast on the left, they were talking about the Burn Bundy Burn t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, I mean, again, if you want to be a proponent of something, like, I don't know, honor the victims, but celebrating the, you know, the killing of a murderer,
mm-hmm.
like, that's creepy. There's no getting around that. That's creepy. So, yeah, I don't know. The overall, I think I watched the first two episodes and then I gave myself a long break before the third one. Because, yeah, I don't know. It does kind of make you a little uneasy if you're, you know, sort of catching the fine details and the take on it.
So would you recommend it to, let's say, to your novice true crime kind of friend? Would you recommend it?
Yeah, with the disclaimer, I would. Yeah, I think it's definitely, it's a very quick, deep dive into Ted Bundy with some pretty gory details.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if memory serves, happens more, say, like, in the second half of the first episodes. Like, they kind of, they hold a lot back. They do a lot of character building. Like you were saying, it is more a character piece about him. And so for that, they try and build, you know, this guy's early life story. But it's, you know what? I think Ted Bundy is boring. Like, I think I'm realizing that now. I think he's a fucking boring, average white guy with a god complex. And so I find it hilarious that this fucking fuckboy is being kind of regarded as, like, one of the most terrifying killers of all time.
He's such, like, a douchebag. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he really, really is. And so I would say watch it. It's interesting. Interesting to know some of the ins and outs of some of the crime. But I would say, really, if you want something Joe Berlinger, like, at his best, obviously Paradise Lost trilogy or Brother's Keeper. Brother's Keeper is one of my most favorite things. It's just, I think I would direct them that way.
Black. Murder leaving a person of this type hungry, unfulfilled, would also leave him with the obviously irrational belief that that the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. And the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. or the next time you did it, you would be fulfilled.
All right, so, well, moving on to stuff that we like and we're looking forward to. So at this point, the listeners will have pretty recently heard the Patreon episode for Get Out, which I recorded far enough back that you were on the Las Vegas trip for work.
Oh, my God. That's been a while.
Yeah, that was, I think it was a couple years, it was a couple months after the movie had come out, and I think when I recorded it, it was just new on Blu-ray, but I adore the movie. I'm so excited for Jordan Peele. It's just been one announcement after another.
Mm-hmm.
He's been crazy busy, not just making Us, writing and directing, as you know, one of the three social thrillers he originally planned, but that he's also producing the Twilight Zone. What the fuck? Like, that, did you watch the
he's like the busiest man, and he's getting the best possible like things to do. He's getting all the good things, not the garbage at all.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome that he's, and that he produced Black Klansman. Like, it's a better world where Jordan Peele can decide, okay, I'm going to make this thing. Okay, I'll help you make this thing.
Right.
For Candyman, that they're doing the remake of. So Nia DaCosta is a writer-director who, she made a crime movie called Little Woods. It takes the point of view of the criminals, in this case, Tessa Thompson and Lily James. I only watched the trailer for that one, but I mean, I love Tessa Thompson. I trust
her
judgment. Me
too, yes.
So Nia DaCosta is going to be directing the Candyman remake with the screenplay by Jordan Peele and Wynn Rosenfeld. Of course, the original 1992 Clive Barker was a Bernard Rose joint. And so, yeah, we were talking about hoping that Tony Todd has, you know, a cameo at least.
Better. Better have.
But yeah, it's written up as a spiritual sequel to the original, returning to the where the legend began, the now gentrified section of Chicago where the Cabrini Green housing projects
once stood. Like, Cabrini Green's not even there anymore.
Right, yeah. So there's that to look forward to. I owe Candyman a rewatch. I haven't seen it in probably over 10 years. You know,
we could totally revisit some of these Clive Barker films. Yeah, Candyman, I really haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I hope it's as good as I remember, because I loved it. I loved
it. Me too. But I'm a little worried that maybe it wasn't so great.
Yeah, you know why? Because you have put it in my head that Virginia Madsen is not a good actress. And
it's not that I put that. I just showed it to you. I've opened your eyes to the truth.
But my memory is that she was good. So whatever. I'm going to figure that out for myself. But okay. So otherwise, Jordan Peele has, I think, two trailers now for Us.
Jason!
Jason!
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me and I'll keep you safe.
So in terms of his movie Us that comes out this month, I'm pretty excited. It's hard for me to get excited about something I know so little about, because
I know,
trailers...
but then I'm kind of even more excited, because it reminds me of the old days when we used to get excited about American Horror Story and they would give you hints.
Yeah.
If you remember, and you'd be like, whoa, what does that mean? And they've been doing these huge posters in the subways here for Us.
Yeah. And I think,
and I'm like, well, why do they wear the gloves? Why do they do this?
The industry people have been getting, maybe it's the announcement for the screening, but they've been getting these packages, like, you know, it's like kind of viral marketing where people will receive the golden scissors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, you are formally invited to, you know, whatever, like, we are watching it. There's some message associated with it. And that popped up on Twitter when people were getting their screeners or whatever that box contained. But yeah, have you watched both trailers?
I have.
Do you have any idea what it's about?
So my only fear is that it's some sort of allegory thing and there's no other people. That's my big fear.
Okay.
But I really do think that there are doppelgangers that are tangible other doppelgangers, but I get a little worried, just a little. worried that it's not really other people.
I'm along for the ride. I think if I had to stretch out and make a guess that, like, it's about identity and identity politics and those kind of themes, just based on the commercial and her name is blanking, but the Peggy from Mad Men.
Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it's going that way, but again, I have no idea, and I'm all for it, and I'm excited, and I think it's going to be fucking weird.
I think it's going to be weird. I think it's going to be awesome and scary, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. So, okay, we've got a lot on our plate coming up on our Patreon episode. We talked about what we've got coming. I'll just say that our last kind of summary of Candyman and Jordan Peele's films are kind of a nod to us moving towards a two-part episode on doing black horror, or movies thematically associated with the horror noir documentary that recently hit Shudder. Yeah, we realized in 4 years we owe it to do some coverage and go there. So we're going to be talking and doing an interview here and there and getting into it. I'm excited. I don't know fully. This is legit one of the places where I am seeking an education, because I don't have a great amount of experience for this genre. Not yet, anyway.
Me either. So I'm excited. I mean, I'm like everyone where I've seen Blackula. You know, I think everyone's seen that, but, you know, there's such a deeper dive and I have no clue what I'm even missing out on. So I'm excited to start watching some films, start reading some articles.
Yeah. Yeah. I've started with, maybe I shouldn't have done this, but Spike Lee did a remake of Ganja and Hess that was contemporary and unwatchable.
Excellent.
We'll talk about it. But for now, you can find us on all social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Rants Macabre. Our email is therantsmacabre@gmail.com. We're on, I think, all the streaming services that I know of.
All the things.
We are on Google Play Music. We are on Stitcher. We are on Spotify. So drop us a line, or if you're on Spotify, just hit the little heart icon for a start.
Yeah. If you're finding us on iTunes, be sure to give us stars and leave a review.
Yeah, who doesn't love praise? But either way, we love hearing from you guys, even if you're not thrilled. we're hungry for input. But yeah, I think that'll do it for now. This turned out to be longer than I thought it would be. Sorry for that, Mindy.
We got a lot of things to talk about. You know what? It's been a little while. We got to chat. We got to catch up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Before we know it, yeah. Sydney will be a podcast guest. That'll be fun.
Yes, he will. He's got a lot of verbiage right now, mostly ooh and guh.
He's impressed.
Yeah, that kid.
Okay, I'll leave it there. This is me, Darren, signing off.
This is me, Mindy. Thanks.